The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Bastards of Boston Baseball. I'm your host, Charlie Smith. You can find me on Twitter /X at Smith_MLB. My co-host for this one is going to be Jeremy Schilling at JTSchill20. If you'd like more Bastards of Boston Baseball content, check out bastardsofbostonbaseball.com. No surprises here. The Boston Red Sox finish up their first three-game set at Fenway, losing 2-1, another series L. And even with 6 runs of support on the board, that is still not enough. The Red Sox drop another series and fall to 2-7, the league's worst record. Going into today, the Boston Red Sox and the San Diego Padres were two of the 4 teams with only 24 runs of support. 24 runs in 8 games gives you a 3-run average. You're lucky to have won 2 games. Thankfully, you have Gerrit Crochet as one of your starters. That means that without Gerrit Crochet, you've won 1 game all season. So I don't know about you, Jeremy, but this game was incredibly frustrating, even in my church Sunday Easter best. It doesn't seem to matter. The Boston Red Sox are just headed in the wrong direction. And I don't know if there was anything that you took away from this game or this series other than we are in big trouble. I'm officially there. We are in trouble.
Yeah, there's so if Colorado and Oakland or whatever you call them win today, we'll have the worst record in baseball by the time we go to bed. Like almost nothing's going right. Big salaried players that are there for moments, big hits, big at-bats, big starts, stopping, losing streaks, like nothing's going the right way. Very, very few bright spots. We'll talk about one of those specifically today, but I mean, everything's bad. They are a terrible baseball team. And you could tell how tight, you know, and we'll talk about some specific players here in a minute, but you could tell how tight they are. You know, like you could look at the body language and the facial expressions. Guys that have been here for a while, guys we've seen play hundreds and hundreds of games, they're squeezing too hard. And it's you know, you can't help but wonder in a moment like now where they're at, where they're currently situated, what a guy like Bregman would bring to the table. And do they have the leadership in place to push through this with a good team coming in here starting Monday? So it seems like we're about to be on the brink of not having a baseball season. And that's the thing that kills me the most, because as much as I want the Red Sox to win and be competitive for a title, I want them on in the background every night as part of my summer with my kids. And it's really looking like there's going to have to be other options, because this is a terrible, terrible product.
Terrible would actually kind of feel like a compliment. I mean, this team is atrocious. And there are so many fan favorites, and that's also being complimentary. I mean, you look at how much money this team has spent, and we've talked about this on multiple shows in the past, other shows, whether it be former people on this one that are basically kind of copying the same format, they'll say the same thing. For the amount of money that you've put into your product, you should be doing a lot better than you're currently doing. There's a lot of pressure on rookies, but you also have some seasoned vets that have been here for a couple of years. And nothing is clicking. Your pitchers aren't pitching well, and your hitters aren't hitting full stop. You got some guys that are hitting under 100. Forget about like the Mendoza line. There's Mendoza line, then there's a boatload of players, then the Boston Red Sox. That's embarrassing. We're 9 games in. Like, this is inexcusable baseball right now. And I mean, this all goes right up there in tie with, you look back at one moment when Brian Baio was pitching and he struck out the batter, and nobody in the stadium, not the managers, not the players, not the umpires, crap, not even people watching. The only person or entity that got it right was ESPN.com. Brian Baio threw strike one, strike two, strike three, and then the at-bat kept going because people forgot how many strikes there were because of the throw down a second that ended up getting, you know, the ball gets thrown around the field. And it's embarrassing. And since that moment, it's almost as if morale, forget about low, forget about down. It just feels just gone. Like people don't care. There is no incentive to play hard or play well. And I mean, everything needs to change. Forget about one little thing here or there.
The thing with the Baio thing, a base runner forgetting how many outs, an outfielder flipping the ball into the stands when there's still an out to go and somebody in scoring position, that stuff happens throughout the season. You know, it's just oh, the comments are already starting. It's just magnified when the product's this bad. You know, I mean, it's 162 games. Stuff like that happens in baseball. You don't necessarily, maybe not a strikeout, a hitter forgetting the count or thinking it's 2-1 and it's 1-2 or something. But when all of those things are magnified when the product is this pathetic. And that's what I say. That's my point in saying everyone's pressing too hard. You know, it's just nothing's coming naturally. Guys, yeah, bats are terrible. We're going to talk, you know, maybe that's one way we can lead off into your opening take, I almost got you, Terry. Charlie, is we got players that look like they are unprepared to have a good at bat. Like they have no chance.
I mean, if you don't have to say you're mad, you could say I'm you know, frustrated, I'm disappointed. I don't know what descriptive term fits this team right now, but it's not positive. I mean, it feels like a complete implosion. It's like Chernobyl as a baseball team for the amount of money. This isn't like an $80 million team where it's a bunch of youngsters and people that, you know, are at the end of their line. Like some of these guys are right about to get ready into their prime. And it's just embarrassing. It's just.
Well, look, you could talk about the money all you want. And look, I wish John Henry would sell the team and
me too, spend of course.
Commensurate with the revenue, which is more than what they're spending right now.
Right.
However, it's not just that, because there's plenty of budget to be competitive. Maybe not to be a championship contender with the way some of these teams are spending and on big players. But we could probably do like a live stream 24-hour filibuster on how disjointed the offseason ended up being because their A, B, C, D, E, F, and whatever plans didn't work out. Sure. The reason why Suarez, who we're going to talk about, you know, in this game, is on this roster. That was a break glass in case of emergency, but seventh on the list as a result of the Bregman thing not working out. So let's start with him. All right. So in this game, they break through. It's a rainy day. You don't expect a lot of runs to be scored. Obviously, we're wrong. And they finally have a big inning where Duran's the key hit down the right field line for a double. They scratch a four across in the inning. Suarez, who to that point had really been in command, mixing pitches, throwing strikes, really commanded the game, generally speaking. Nothing was too laborsome. He was, you know, within a decent pitch limit for the four innings. And then he comes out and it is just batting practice. There are, you have bad innings where it's a walk, an error, a base hit, you know. So this was line drives all over the place to the point where you have to go with somebody else in the fifth. So, you know, this isn't the fifth guy in the rotation. This guy, they spent a $100 million contract on this guy. You know, he was to be brought in to be the number two, 2A, 2B with Sonny Gray, but the exception of Sonny Gray, who's only going to be here for a year. This is a guy that's supposed to be that guy behind Crochet for the next 4 or 5 years. And I'm not saying that it was a bad deal yet. Two starts in, he's been terrible. That inning can't happen. It can't happen. You got to find a way. And I don't know what happened. I don't know if it was the longer delay in the cold weather. Go down in the tunnel and throw. You know, whatever it takes. But that can't be the response to the offense finally waking up. And I hate to bring it up because I love the player and I think he's going to be great for a long time. But the same thing with Crochet and his start a few days ago. They open up the game with a run, bang, come right back. We're down 2-1. It can't be the response from the pitching staff when this offense works, because they're not going to score a bunch of runs, especially with the home runs. They're not hitting the ball into the ballpark. I have really very little expectation that they will. And when they do come out and put up a crooked number, the starting pitching or whoever's going to respond to that has to be better than this team has been through the first 10 days of the season. It's been terrible.
Ranger Suarez comes in. I mean, this is, we've been screaming, we're past asking, sharing, maybe informing, begging with knee pads on, please get us another bat. Please get us a pitcher. Do something. You ever seen that movie Shooter, the Mark Wahlberg film, where the senator is sitting on the ground and his driver or his lawyer, whatever, sitting there, and he's going, there's going, do something. That's us right now as Red Sox fans. Just do something. And we spent $130 million on Ranger Suarez. But now when he comes out, until it's like that expression when we did the preseason show of, you know, Shohei Ohtani and Aaron Judge are going to win the MVPs until they prove to us that they can't win it anymore. I don't know if I can have the faith in Ranger Danger right now. Like when he's coming out in the mound, I'm not confident. And it's sad because you fronted him a 4-run lead. You gave him 4 runs. And we weren't able, you as someone who got $130 million couldn't keep that together. So that to me screams concern. Like you need to have 6 runs of support to be confident. I mean, dude, even if we scored 8 runs, we're still going into the 9th inning here. Or 10th inning, excuse me. Like this is our first game. It took 9 games to get more than 5 runs. 9 games. That's insane. That is absolutely insane. Silver lining. Oh, but at least you're averaging more than 3 runs a game. Who the hell gives a shit? Excuse my expression. You're still losing the games. And here's the thing. You make it close towards the end, and then you blow it later on. So Ranger Suarez, who's supposed to get $130 million, who's supposed to be your saving grace, I get he's not making that much money right now, but in 3 years, the guy's making $30 million. And in 2030, he's making $35 million. So is this the beginning of like the nightmare of Ranger Suarez, or is he going to be able to right the ship? Does he need to have this offensive onslaught of Kyle Schwarber and Trey Turner and Nick Castellanos before he was old, who we faced today and hasn't done anything all year and had a two run single, I believe, to you know, knocking his first RBIs of the season? That's bad. Like, that's really bad. I know Terry really liked Castellanos, but he's washed. He's done. Sorry, Terry. He's just not good anymore. And he made you look like, a peewee team. And you just can't do that. You know, you can't afford to throw 4 on the board and then all of a sudden find yourselves down by 2. It's just inexcusable. On top of the fact, Manny Machado always seems to have the Red Sox number and made them pay with a 3-run, you know, the Aaron Judge home run, the 3-run shot. So there's a lot to be concerned about Ranger Suarez. I like the guy. I really want him to succeed. We all want him to succeed. But so far in the short sample size that he's got, his ERA is like almost 10. That's not good. And his fastball isn't, 98. It's not like elite superstar Garrett Crochet throwing 98, 99. He's not that guy. And he knows he's not that guy. So whatever he needs to do to get adjusted, please do it sooner rather than later, because you were the first person I ever heard say that the expression was, you can't win a division the first month of the season. You can, however, lose it. You're now 2-7. You're 5 games under. And it just so happens that 2 teams in your division have only lost 1 or 2 games. So you're already 6 games out of first place. And we're not even 10 games into the season. This is awful. I mean, awful. And I don't think I remember being this annoyed at a Red Sox team. They have talented players, but we look like we don't have talent. Anything else you want to add to Suarez?
Well, we have talent. It's just the roster's so imbalanced. And I don't want to keep saying the same thing over and over again. And I'll get to this point in a minute because I want to finish my point with the way the game was managed from an arms perspective. So just in a minute, I'm going to talk about Yoshida. But I've been on this train for, it feels like, 2 years. Why is Greg Weissert getting the ball with a lead? And I know it's the fifth inning and it's early, but that was the top of the lineup coming up. And I'm one of these guys that are baseball fans that doesn't just think that your best reliever, your closer, should get the ninth. So if I'm managing the team and in the eighth, it's the 2-3-4, and then you'd think the bottom of the lineup in the ninth, I'd flip-flop the eighth and the ninth, guys, traditionally. So with this team, Chapman would get the eighth, and then Whitlock would get the ninth with the bottom of the lineup. That's how I would handle it, okay? So in the fifth, the question posed on Twitter amongst Red Sox fans was, is Suarez going to get the fifth? And I knew he wasn't. He gave up too many hard contact balls in the fourth.
It was awful.
They needed to win the game. And your answer is Weissert? Why? Right. Because it's the fifth inning? Right. Like, it's the top of the lineup. Go with the guy that you want to get those guys out with. So what – like, I don't understand where the mindset is. And for a team that now has Roman Anthony batting leadoff instead of third, where he should be, which is the non-traditional new way of doing it, why are we managing the bullpens like we have a fifth inning guy, a sixth inning guy, a seventh, a closer? No. If it's the meat of the lineup coming up, you have to match accordingly. It's like a hockey team. If someone drops out their first line, you drop out your first line. If they go to the checking line, you put out the checking line. I don't understand why it's being managed that way when we're 2-6 coming into the game and you really need to win the game. So that's number one. My issue with Weissert even being out there, because I'm sitting there watching it with my best friend, and I predicted it. I said, look, we're going to see – he's not a Red Sox fan. He's a Philly fan. I said, look, you're going to see some non-competitive pitches, meaning he's going to miss by like 10 inches, and it's going to be more of can Narvaez catch the ball than is the hitter going to offer at it. So that's number one. And then when I saw the Machado get to the point where Machado was going to face him, I knew it was going to end bad. I didn't expect it to be a full throw in the monster seats, but that's what it is. Sure. So then that's an issue. All right. Now, Uberstein, who Nesson gave so much time to the family, who looked so nervous for their son, daughter, brother, boyfriend, like, stop isolating them. Like, show him once, show him twice, show him when he gets his first strikeout, which they didn't do, by the way, and stop putting all that on the family. I don't like that side of it. But the kid pitches well. He gets the two innings. He gives him a little bit of length. He gets him into the seventh inning or whatever. It was a seventh inning. And then they score the two runs to tie the game, and no one's up. So now you look up, and Kelly's warming up like it's a Chinese fire drill. And I'm like, he's not going to be ready. And so, of course, they don't have the go-ahead hit. It happens relatively quickly, and Kelly's not ready. And so what happens? You got to send Uberstein out for a third inning.
Yeah. So a couple I'll say it, and I apologize. I'll let you finish your thought.
Go ahead.
I don't know why Greg Weissert keeps on coming in as often as he does. I mean, we talked about Suarez, and you kind of stole my thunder a little bit, but I'm going to just absolutely torch this one. There's been 9 games. We've now seen him 5 times. Is the goal to get him to 100 games this year? Why do we keep seeing Weissert out there? Last year, in 67 innings, I believe it was, 67 innings, Weissert allowed 6 home runs, 72 appearances. We're now at 5 appearances. He's given up 3. We're going to see a record number of home runs given by Greg Weissert this year because it's not his fault. I mean, the guy's already starting to get overused, and we're only 9 games into the season. So I'm trying to understand what the hell we're doing because it's clearly not working. And you're right. You're absolutely right. Why are we going with the traditional 8th, 9th guys when that's not even working right now? Chapman should be used kind of like the Dodgers were using their closer at some points. They were using Evan Phillips back in the day as their eighth inning guy. And then if he had the juice to come in the ninth, they might have him pitch a little bit, or if he had enough, maybe go two innings, or they bring in somebody else, because it just doesn't make sense to have a Aroldis Chapman pitcher against a 7-8-9 if you're in theory up by one and then he comes in and you're down by one. So you're absolutely right. Preserve the lead. Be smart. This isn't a super talented team right now as far as the bullpen's concerned. Sorry, guys. But, like, this isn't it. You're looking at your relievers. And, I mean, here's the sad part. And it's a small sample size. I get it. We've only played a couple of games. A couple of earned runs can absolutely torch your ERA. But if your starter has an ERA almost at 9, your Greg Weissert's ERA is almost 10 right now. You think about the ERA of the entire bullpen for the Padres. Like, the Padres last year went open season on all of the prospects. They're like, here, take prospects. You want this one? We want this guy. Take this guy. We want this reliever. And they built an absolute destructive bullpen with an absolute monster in the ninth inning. You had Mason Miller as your eighth inning guy. That's your closer on 29 teams. And he's your eighth inning guy. They had all sub 2 ERA. Some of them were like 1.1. And that's after like 60 games. Like, they are here. They are serious. They are playing for real. They're contending. That's not Greg Weissert. Greg Weissert's going to get tossed around a little bit. And guess what? If you give him one night off and then have him pitch every other game or every other day, he's now pitched an average of more, just under once every two games. If he doesn't pitch in the next game, then he's back to once every other. 5 appearances in 10 games. But it's atrocious. I mean, you got some guys that are coming in for a third inning. And you talked about the new reliever. What was his name? Uberstein?
Yeah, the guy they just brought up from Worcester.
Two and a third.
When they put on the DL.
Yeah, and who knows? I mean, I'm so upset about that move. I honestly want Major League Baseball to look into that to see if that was damaged goods, because the Pirates have had a history of making trades with the Red Sox that don't end up working out well. We traded for Mark Melanson. Melanson was a bust. We traded for Joel Hanrahan back-to-back years. He ended up being an absolute trash shoot. And now this, it's the third pitcher, and that was, correct me if I'm wrong, not looking, 2010, 2011-ish. Around that time, you can look at it. Mark Melanson looked like he was done. And then he ended up pitching for another decade after that for the Pirates, I think for the Yankees at one point, for, I don't know, the Reds, just a boatload of other teams, ended up pitching for Pittsburgh again and being great. Joel Hanrahan was done. Why are we trading with teams that just are known for historically making bad moves? You shouldn't trade with the Pirates. You shouldn't trade with the Brewers. Ever. I don't care what they're offering you. It's probably not good. The Brewers gave us Tyler Thornburg, who is just awful for us, just terrible. And I mean, I'm going to roast one of the trades that we made or acquisitions that we made last year, because we are just, forget about having egg on your face, forget about getting absolutely worked, but I want to talk about him as soon as we're done with the hitters. So is there a member of the offense that you wanted to highlight or absolutely destroy, Jeremy?
I mean, on the question side of, you know, destroying, we could attack any number of people. I was going to just talk about Abreu. You know, Abreu is a guy that was playing in the WBC, had a great tournament. I think he hit like 3 bombs, a couple of key home runs. And unlike some of the other people that have played in the WBC, he came into the regular season and he hasn't missed a beat. So he's already a 2-time gold winning right fielder. You know what you're going to get out of him out there. But I mean, he's the lone bright spot on this team right now. He's the only one hitting, the ball off the wall in the inning they tied the game off a lefty, Peralta, who that pitch was 95 on the outside half. And he just crushed that ball off the wall. So he's been extremely consistent. He's hitting over 400, which obviously isn't going to stay that way. But, I mean, he's seemingly, with all the chaos and failure going on around him, in a year for him, you would expect him to kind of move forward with his career and working towards an extension and all those sorts of things. He's been really the lone bright spot. So that to me tells me that his preparation has been excellent, not only just for the season, but on a night-to-night basis, because as everyone else is gripping it too tight, if everyone else is failing in the big moments, he's the one guy that's prepared to succeed on a night-in and night-out basis, and that's tough because the WBC started about a month ago. So I don't know what he did in the offseason. I don't know what he did differently. I don't know where he is mentally, but it's obviously in a good spot, and whatever he did in the offseason to prepare is working, and you know, I'm happy for the player. And, you know, it's somebody, maybe not from a leadership perspective, rah-rah locker room thing, but at least you can look at him and say, here's somebody maybe we want to pay some more attention to because he's prepared.
So Abreu is really the only bright spot. I mean, we've seen his strikeout numbers go from 31% to 27% to 20% so far in 2026. He's 26 years old. We haven't given him an extension. He's eligible, I think, ARB1 next year. 2027. But yeah, I think you should be paying a little bit more attention to this guy, because some people go to the World Baseball Classic and they overperform in the regular season. They just kind of drop off. They fall, they just keel over and that's it.
Yoshida.
I'm not getting that. Don't get me started. Right. He's the only guy with more than one home run on the season as a member of the Red Sox. He's leading your team with 7 RBIs. And going into today, I think he was one of the only people with more than 3 RBIs on the season. Because Yoshida had several today. Duran had a couple today. So they were each under 3. I think Meyer, I'm trying to remember the sheet when we were watching. It was Meyer and maybe Rafaela. Maybe I'm missing one. I don't think Story has 3 yet. That's it. I mean, this is a lackluster team. You came into today scoring 24 runs. So now you're up to 30. Congratulations. A little over 3 runs, but you might get shut out tomorrow. In which case, then guess what? Congratulations. You're back to a 3 run per game situation. William Abreu has been the only saving grace this year. He really has been the only guy that looks like he gives a damn. And maybe you can make an argument for Connor Wong in a limited sample size because he's only played a handful of games and he's already got 3 doubles, which is insane because last year it took months for him to get an extra base hit. I haven't seen the home run bit yet, but I'm sure that's coming. You know, I mean, we've had so many misses with, you know, Caleb Durbin, dude. I mean, absolutely getting destroyed. He's only got a handful of hits. I think he's got 2. And I mean, it's terrible. Without Abreu on this team, dude, we might be winless. That's how bad we might be. That's how embarrassingly bad. Maybe a win the first game of the season. But I want to shift gears to a second. I want to talk about someone who really was the jet for the Red Sox last year, and that's Trevor Story. Trevor Story has 5 hits this year, maybe 6. He's hitting .119. He has struck out almost half of his at-bats. He's leading the team with 17 strikeouts. Outside of his home run that he hit, he has not scored a run since. He has another RBI to his name. How much more of this are we going to take? He's got only a couple extra base hits. This is a problem. Trevor Story needs to get it together. Like, this is not working. What happened to Trevor Story in less than a year's time? What is going on?
You know, I typically go into the preparation. I know he's a hard worker. He's in great shape. He's a professional athlete to the T. Like, he's a professional. But, you know, some guys just don't get going until the weather. You know, this start is particularly bad. Obviously, he's now with Bregman gone, your leader. And you're looking at him and you look over and he's hitting 100. And there's not a lot of hard contact. He's been, you know, really bad. Couple of things. Number one, he's not going anywhere. If he's still hitting like this in 4 to 6 weeks, then you might expect a move, but Cora's not going to move off a veteran like Story anytime soon. And I wouldn't expect him to, frankly. And by the way, I think by the time the season levels off, I think Story may not be as good as he was last year, but I think he's going to be fine. My issue is more where, going back to the roster construction, Yoshida's playing left today. there's a couple balls that landed in front of him that you would think an athletic defensive outfielder would maybe even make a play on. He is so awkward. It's like those punch'em games from the 80s, you know, where you just hit the button and the guys are just flailing their arms. That's how he runs. That's how he throws. Like, he's not, he is a non-athlete playing baseball. And when you do something like put Yoshida in left and Duran in center, there's a trickle-down effect because Duran's not a center fielder. And I just think there were a couple of balls that Rafaela may have got to, and if Anthony or Duran were in left, a couple balls they would have got to. And I thought, without any errors, the outfield defense was pretty bad tonight. Or today, it was a day game. So, you know, between Story and not really having an answer there, maybe it's Meyer if you're not going to go Story, but there's no immediate plan that we can tell in place if you're going to move off of somebody like Story. But the way that this thing is being managed, one, there's no sense of urgency, but the roster is built where Cora, in my opinion, and I talked about this on Friday with Terry, there's not a lot of real sound, make sense options here. And I don't think us generally as the fan base should expect any real shakeup. I don't see an obvious DFA. You could say, well, Yoshida, well, they're not going to get rid of the money. We've been doing this for 2-3 years. He still has another year. They're not doing it. So I don't see, you know, Durbin has options. Maybe you move Meyer over there, especially once you get, oh my God, who's the guy in the DL with the shoulder? I'm spacing it on his name. Romy Gonzalez. There it is.
Oh, Romy. Okay. Got it. Okay.
So when Romy gets healthy, you might see Durbin be optioned, which would make sense considering how bad he's been.
Please.
But other than that, they're not moving off Contreras. The catcher's position's not changing. Story's going to be your shortstop. The outfield's going to be what it is. Like, there, I don't see where you have, like, so you just got to hopefully, I hate to say it, but to me, this is, you got to wait for guys to kind of heat up with the weather. It's just, how bad's it going to be? Are you going to be 7-20? Because the season's over. You're not overcoming that.
You might be, Jeremy. You might be 7-20.
And that's not going to happen.
No, but you might be 7-20. Warm up to the idea that 7-20 is a real possibility. That means you're going another 5-13. Yeah, there's a real warm chance of that happening.
I don't think that's
going
to happen, but it's on the table, obviously.
Of course it is. Your team can't generate runs. Your pitchers can't perform. They can't even get out of the fourth, fifth inning. That's not a recipe for success. You mix that up with someone like Sandy Alcantara that came, he missed a whole year. Tommy John surgery, right? And he had the Maddox complete game shutout. Less than 100 pitches, 9 innings, no runs allowed. Sandy Alcantara can do it. Why we didn't try to make a move for somebody like that blows my mind away. You know, and hindsight's 20/20, but I've said this before and I'm not the first person to say it. I won't be the last. Hope is not a strategy. You cannot hope for warmer weather for bats to start, you know, warming up and, you know, ball will sail a little bit farther, because players like Caleb Durbin, I don't think 4 feet's going to make a difference. A flyout's still a flyout. So Durbin just wasn't the answer. And you know, him and I, you know, IKF, Isaiah Kiner for left, I'm still never going to truly understand that decision. And we're going to continue getting torched, you know, 2-7 right now. So we can revisit this. I'm sure it'll be you and I together again, close to that 7-20 range. 5-13. That's what we need to do. We need to go 5-13. And there's at least another 4 or 5 game losing streak in that span. So really, when you look at it, you have to go 5-7. That's hoping. Again, hoping the strategy, right? Anything else you want to add to Abreu and Story?
No?
Okay. I'm so glad that you're sitting. I have been really upset about moves that the Red Sox have made because we seem to get fleeced every single time we make a move. Every single time. Now, the Boston Red Sox made arguably a dumb or a wild, outlandish, or good for the clubhouse trade when they got rid of Rafael Devers. They unloaded the entire contract, what was remaining. It wasn't the full $300 million, but it was less the time that he'd spent. And we got a a package that included a player who did not do well. And off the air, in our group, we were trying to figure out if there was an article that we could share as a reference point. And I think it was Jason that shared that he was having some levels of uncomfortability in the Red Sox farm system at AA. He hit just a little over 200, had one home run, seven RBIs, but just like 207, 209. And the Boston Red Sox traded one of the players from that, I believe Tibbs came from that move, if I'm not mistaken. James Tibbs III gets traded to the Los Angeles Dodgers for 2+ months of Dustin May. Could be upper 90s, 99, 100 mile an hour pitches. The problem is he doesn't know where they're going and neither do we. And that was a little bit of a disaster. I was a Dustin May supporter. I didn't really know what Tibbs was going to end up being, but I was hoping that Tibbs was going to be good. It was really disappointing that we didn't give him a chance. He was only hitting 200, 207. And Tibbs so far had a three homer game yesterday. He has 7 home runs in 8 games. It's like 7 home runs, 12, 13 RBIs. He's hitting .545. With an OPS over 1,900. His slugging is over like 1,400 or 1,300. I'm going to pull up his line because I want to go over this. It's unbelievable what he's doing right now at AAA. And they just lost Mookie Betts. So Mookie Betts was an infielder. If he was the outfielder, it probably would have made sense to bring him up. So far, AAA, he has 18 hits and 35 at-bats, 15 runs scored in 8 games, 7 home runs, 13 RBIs, 4 walks, hitting .514. With a .564 OBP, .1286 slugging, .1850 OPS. That's past Judge, Bonds, all those guys. And I get it's AAA, super small sample size, but man, oh man, if this guy turns out to be really, really good, and mind you, he's 23 years old, this has Jeff Bagwell for Larry Anderson written all over it. One of the dumbest trades that the Red Sox ever made, especially if Tibbs comes up to the Dodgers and absolutely rakes. Because if I'm a GM on any team that's not the Boston Red Sox, I can't wait to fleece them because I'm giving them my garbage and I'm taking their top third, fourth, fifth pick, and it's not going to matter. We've been talking about how Tibbs didn't really do well in the farm, and all of a sudden, he goes to LA and lights it up like a Christmas tree from 207 at AA to .545 at AAA. You're now hitting more than 2.5 times better at a tier above where you were. Makes you wonder, what would a player like Marcelo Meyer or Roman Anthony or crap, even, you know, the password if he was still here and he didn't get traded on a team like that, what are they doing that we're not doing? How bad are we doing this? Are we fundamentally destroying our minor league talent? Because at this point, you're not going to be able to get anybody from AA or AAA ready to play on the Boston Red Sox. The only way that you are going to be able to get major league baseball players playing in Boston is you trade for them or you sign them during the offseason. Because it's not going to happen if you keep trading away your top prospects for rentals. It just doesn't work. Because, I mean, if I'm the Dodgers front office, oh my God, am I celebrating? Because people could say, oh, hindsight's 2020. We don't know what would have happened with Tibbs, right? The problem is Tibbs is absolutely raking. And he was one of the, I believe, the Giants' top prospects because that was one of the players. And Kyle Harrison's also doing well. I don't know if he's pitching today or if he's pitching tomorrow, but I'm waiting for Kyle Harrison to rake this year. I really am, because this front office is beyond stupid. They can't comprehend talent. They don't get it. And it's just going to continue getting worse. And this is the ship sinking, plane going down, and you're not going to be able to save anybody. They literally have to clean house. John Henry needs to sell the team at this point. Morale is down. The owners don't know what they're doing. Your GM is completely lost in the sauce. I mean, it's a disaster, but the Tibbs move could absolutely destroy us in the future too.
Yeah, I understand your frustration with Tibbs, especially because they kind of half-assed buying at the deadline. So they, you know, not to go back to last year in that time, but there were other options available. And if you want to give up a minor leaguer or two for somebody that has a known track record, come in and be a veteran to kind of round out your roster, But that's not what Dustin May was. He was a guy that you hope Bailey got a hold of and fixed, and it actually got worse, not better. And I think they DFA'd him. I don't remember if he stayed on the team the whole year. But as to Tibbs specifically, he's doing what he's doing in AAA. You know what I feel about minor leaguers. Even the best minor leaguers rise through the organization fast. Christian Campbell's an example. Until they do it at the big league level, I don't buy it. The other thing is, he's not coming up with the Dodgers. All right. What they're seeing right there is they're saying, this is a guy that we can then flip at the deadline to fill an actual need. That big league club and that organization are so stacked with players, depth everywhere. Like, he has no chance of being a big leaguer with the Dodgers unless he's going to stay down in the minor leagues for two or three more years. So to me, all he's doing is giving his stock raise so that come the deadline, the Dodgers use him to move and go get a pitcher or something or fill a specific need. So who knows when Tibbs comes up to the base? Who knows if he even does? But so I'm not going to overreact to that. I'm certainly not willing to go to the extent that this is a Bagwell type of deal. There is no inclination as we sit here today that Tibbs is ready to become a big league Hall of Famer. So I do get your point with giving away an asset for a non-known commodity. That didn't make any sense. I think we all roundly panned that decision last year. It doesn't look any better now, but I don't know that I'm ready to say that, you know, he's going to be this big league player for the next 10 years and a possible Hall of Famer. That's not ready to go there.
No, but you know, it's par for the course. If you're trading with the Boston Red Sox, you're trading for your future all-stars. And I understand where you're coming from, but Mookie Betts, if he was an outfielder and not an infielder, I think that's the person you call up, because I don't know how you don't. I mean, Connor Griffin for the Pirates did okay in the minors, stole a couple bases, a couple RBIs, maybe a home run, was hitting 400 or 500. And they called him up. He was the number one pick, and everyone thought, oh my God, this is it. He's 19, shade under 20. But I mean, he knows, the Dodgers get it, man. If there's an opportunity to make moves, I actually think Tibbs might be one of your untouchables. I really, really do. Because there's going to come a player that doesn't play on this team in a year because he's gone or he gets moved or traded. Like Teoscar Hernandez, he signed, I think, a 2 or 3 year deal with the Dodgers. It wouldn't surprise me if they ended up moving somebody like that to open the door for somebody like James Tibbs III. It would not surprise me, because eventually you have to bring in some young guns. They have a really young catcher in LA named Dalton Rushing. Dalton Rushing is supposed to be the backup for Will Smith. Will Smith is not going to catch 160 games. Give him 100 or 90 games. Let Dalton Rushing catch the other 60 or 70 or however they're going to break it down. Dalton Rushing is nowhere near Will Smith's level of defense. I think he's the best defensive catcher in baseball. I don't think he's the best offensive catcher in baseball. But who knows? That team, like you mentioned, will fill every single hole with a need if they have it. The Boston Red Sox have too many holes to fill and are going with the, we'll figure it out when we get there. And then we don't figure it out because you half-ass the deadline, you half-ass the offseason, and that's what you have. You have a half-assed team. That's 2-7. That's half-assed. You don't say you're serious and then go 2-7. That doesn't make any sense. It defies logic. Numbers do not lie. People do. You don't go 2-7 saying, oh yeah, we went all in. Bullshit. That's twice now I've gone off, and I never go off. I'm just really upset right now. I know it's Easter, but it's hard. I feel bad for people that bought tickets. Like one of our co-hosts bought season tickets and ended up saying, no, I'm not doing it. I'm like, bro, I gave up my season tickets that I didn't even buy. Like, I won't spend a dollar at that stadium. I won't do it, because these owners don't get it. If you keep spending money, they haven't learned their lesson. They haven't done it. And it's not like ticket prices are going down, they're going up. So it's like, this doesn't make sense. You've invested money, but you've also made bad investments. And yeah, you're trying to recoup some of that, but this is a team that also does do very well. They're not spending 90% of their income on their team. That's not the Boston Red Sox. That is, however, the Dodgers. And that's why their stadium is always selling out. And that's why they're probably going to win 3 World Series in a row. It's crazy. Anything else you want to add? No? Well, to all those that were joining us, happy Easter to all of you. If you celebrate, if you don't, happy holidays. Enjoy some time with your family. Hopefully the Red Sox are going to be able to get something done. The Boston Red Sox have a difficult upcoming series. I don't know if you've taken a look at it, but I'm not really looking forward to where we're going to be going as far as Milwaukee's concerned. Really quickly, if you look at that schedule, we'll do this really, really quick. You've got Brian Bello going up against Brandon Woodruff, who's one of their better pitchers. You got Garrett Crochet, who I hope does well, against Jacob Mizuruski. They don't have an announced starter for game three, but he will be going up against Sonny Gray. So I think, once again, you lose the next series, and your 2-7 goes to 3-9. Anything else you want to add? That's it, folks. Happy Easter. Go Red Sox if you're still cheering for the Red Sox in baseball. If you want any more great articles, check out bastardsofbostonbaseball.com. Everyone have a great one. Take care.